Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Welcome to the seventh show of Talking Ed Season 2, presented by the students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change Cohort 2. I am Sabrina, your host for the day, back again with a new topic on adult education. So listeners, today on this show, we will be discussing about the role of NGO in adult education. We will discuss how NGO plays a role in developing countries, if there are any difference between the way an NGO and INGO works. What are the challenges for a country where an NGO is working? Is there any other mechanism which may help NGO work better? We will discuss all these issues with Dania from Honduras, Mari from Georgia, and Irini from Greece.
Hello, everyone. Hello, colleagues. It's a pleasure to be with you again in this radio program.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Hello.
Today we will be talking about NGO sector work from different countries' perspective, Honduras, Georgia, and Greece. First, I would like to ask Dania about NGOs working in Honduras. How does NGO works in Honduras, Dania?
Thank you, Sabrina. Before answering your question, I would like to go over what is an NGO. The United Nations, UN, defines NGO as a not-for-profit voluntary citizens group, which is organized on a local, national, or international level to address issues in support of the public good. The number of INGOs and NGOs has increased greatly since 1970s. However, INGOs first appeared during the latter half of the 19th century. The significant increase of NGOs is the response to the globalization. More specifically, response to the liberalization of international trade, the regulation of financial markets, and fundamentally transform international division of labor, etc. The impact of INGOs and NGOs on adult education is significantly strong. They are trying to fill the gaps between education and adults created by state entities. Besides working directly with beneficiaries, many NGOs are working on policy-making level, and by doing so, the impact on the nature of adult education provision is increasing. Now, let me share with you the NGO's panorama in Honduras. According to El Heraldo newspaper, the Unit of Records and Monitoring of Civil Associations, URSAC, provides data from 2014 of a total of 16,000 non-governmental foundations, associations, and organizations in Honduras. The more frequent social reasons of creation of these types of association are education, health, environment, economic development, water, and sanitation. As we can notice from this information, the NGOs do not promote adult education itself. However, very good examples of NGOs using arts to educate citizens are MIN, Museum of National Identity, MUA, Women in Arts, and another international and very influential NGO is CCET, Cultural Center of Spain in Tegucigalpa. All of them offer safe spaces to develop different cultural and artistic expressions in all forms involving young adults through volunteering and inviting local artists to be part of all the projects and performances offered. In this way, educating adults and the rest of the society. I personally think this is a very enjoyable manner to start educating adults.
Wow, there is a lot of things going on in Honduras, Dania. What is the situation in Greece, Irini?
In general, volunteering in Greece cannot be characterized as a concept widely practiced in the Greek community. So what I mean is historically the characteristics that dominated Greek civil society were a strong intervention of the state and the Orthodox Church in the provision of social services, obviously weak government support towards non-governmental organizations, and an individualist society dependent on strong family ties. So family and networks of relatives have always created the basic framework of mutual aid, solidarity and cooperation in Greece. Traditionally, Greeks have learned to rely mostly on their families and not on the community. Greeks lack social trust, which is a prerequisite for the development of voluntary organizations. This is made worse in the context of a strongly centralized state. As a consequence, volunteering has not been widely promoted or accepted in the Greek society. In recent years, however, a new wave of volunteering has begun to unfold in Greece. So this is due to a gradual but continuous transformation of the Greek society, especially during the past 15 years or so. So the level of participation and the recognition of non-governmental organizations has increased significantly, and this is reflected in some government initiatives to clarify the legislative and institutional framework of voluntary organizations.
I see a lot of emphasis on volunteering in Greece and importance of family, but lack of trust in society. That's interesting, Irini. What about Georgia, Mari? What is your experience working there?
Hello, everyone again. There are 21,000 non-governmental organizations registered in Georgia, according to the civil society organizations portal. And this is indeed quite a big number for such a small country, but also it shows that there are a lot of problems that need to be addressed. In terms of adults, most often they stop taking educational courses after higher education, and it's not usual and common to study something new after that. And especially adult education in Georgia is not recognized as an independent educational sector and do not receive much governmental support. It means that most of the activities in adult education are mostly run with the support of non-governmental organizations. There are no statistics showing how many NGOs are exactly working in adult education field, but based on my experience, I can say that there are not many. The biggest actor in this field is DBB International, which is closely working with the Georgian Adult Education Network. And they have opened 9 adult education centers in Georgia, and I can say that they are the key players in this field. To look at the aims of these activities run by DBV International, the main target group is IDPs, which are internally displaced people. And this is because the 20% of our country is occupied by Russia, so we have IDPs in Georgia. And also, I want to mention other organizations as well, which is like the World Vision and South Children's Villages Georgia. And they're working with adults as well, but because of the children, because main focus for them is children. And because of that, they're working with adults, with their parents, to in terms of like awareness raising for the better and the positive parenting, etc. Most often, the aim for the non-governmental organizations in the programs is social and economic and income-generating curricular development. And other very popular activities for adults are learning positive parenting, as I've already said, and IT skills, gender, healthy lifestyle, entrepreneurship skills, and etc.
Thank you, Mari. That was very insightful. All these three countries are different and emphasize on different aspects of NGO work. So do you think that initiative by NGOs are helping to develop your countries? Irini, we will start from you.
Yes. So, well, for me, the key cultural and social benefits of volunteering and the NGO action generally relate to stronger social cohesion, which is connected with greater safety and solidarity in a society. So volunteering helps people become more open-minded and come to contact with others that may belong to different social and cultural groups. In this way, volunteering promotes the values of tolerance, compassion, diversity, an increased understanding of social problems, and shows some potential solutions. The perceived added value of volunteering for the community is creating a stronger social fabric and a stronger sense of community. Volunteering certainly is a form of civic action, and it also contributes to more cohesive communities and has certainly contributed to social policy goals at national level, especially in Greece. One recent example, well, recent 10 years ago, actually, 14. It was the Paralympics in 2004 in Greece that helped many Greeks familiarize themselves with disability issues. Volunteers gained first-hand insight into the challenges that people with disabilities face, but also, let's not forget, that they celebrated the sporting endeavors of athletes with disabilities.
So you think that because of these voluntary work, the community is coming together and playing a role for positive change of the community?
Yes, yes, that's correct. As I said before, the NGO work is very strong, but mostly in the big cities in Greece, where the most of the population is concentrated. So having initiatives in the rest of the Greece, it really helps people get closer to NGO work and recognize the positive change that everybody really can afflict.
Wow, that is really great. Is that the same in Honduras, Dania, or you have something different there going on?
I will attempt to reply to this question by saying that NGOs help partially. We cannot deny that different NGOs and its projects help to start with the development in our countries. However, my main concern about this is focusing from the individual to a community or vice versa. How do we really aim the sense of collectivity in projects? To illustrate, in my last experience being part of a teaching English project, we had very talented members from the community, most of them students at school and high school. As the project developed and reached to an end, we needed people to continue the project as graduate students from the English language courses. What happened was that many of them decided not to continue on it. The most complex part is that these alumni of our project were succeeding at a personal level, and even all these kids could go abroad. Can this individualistic orientation be seen as negative? It is a very, and another difficult question to answer as well. But what it comes to my mind is the struggle of the selfhood versus communal aspects in life. Badetti shares a very worthy opinion in his research article called Self and Community, and the importance of interdependence and its shadow side. And he says, the self is relational and interdependent. We have seen how in community selves are in constant relationship and affect each other. Core members and staff come to community with different histories, experiences, and preferences, bringing those to their interaction with others. I find this very valuable because considering the self with a high level of importance, accepting the nature of being relational and interdependent, make us understand and acknowledge a bit more on how we can interact and work together towards a common goal. At the same time, he focused the attention on the prevention of potential oppression and overdependence that prevents individuals from growing. Based on this, I totally agree on this overdependence situation, and we have the opportunity to break this change all together with more conscious individuals and lower the chances of oppression.
I agree, Dania, that promoting continuity and sustainability is in a meaningful manner is important. What is the positive of NGO for you, Mari? Do you feel the same like Dania?
To be honest, I found this question the most difficult to think about. And despite of the fact I've been in NGO sector and I've seen many positive individual examples, I can't relate them as the fundamental positive examples. But anyway, first I want to distinguish the different types of NGOs, which are like the policymakers, service providers, and those who are doing the monitoring work. Some of their programs and projects are definitely helpful to improve the life of the certain people, especially if we are talking about the awareness-raising programs, then definitely yes. For example, when they're promoting the healthy lifestyle, the ideal effective citizenship, positive parenting, etc., they definitely have a positive impact. And also the organizations who are working in the field of government monitoring, and we have many good examples when they address the issues of inefficient expenses of the budget, and when the examples of when they address the issues of inadequately high salaries of the public officials. And I can say that this is the really, really good examples. Also, NGO sector in Georgia is actively involved in the field of child welfare, and it's crucially important for the children in the situation when government cannot provide and afford the appropriate services for them. So those are the general good examples I can think of. But there are some positive, this is the positive aspects I do acknowledge that exist, but I think that for the sustainable reason, we need a bit different approach. That's why I think that if more NGOs will focus more on policymaking level and will advocate the changes with government and help them find the resources will give us a better picture. What is happening sometimes is that when projects finish, they leave the communities, and this is the end of the story. But this will never ever change the big picture. So I understand that NGOs does not have the all financial resources to meet the needs of the whole country, but for sustainability reasons again, working with the government and help them find the resources would be more efficient. Because I understand that changing the life of five persons is good, but they should think more globally, I think.
Okay, thank you, Mari, for your insightful information. To Talking Heads Season 2, presented by IMAS Cohort 2. Today we are discussing about the role NGO plays in adult education sector. Before the break, Dania, Irini and Mari were sharing about different mechanism of NGOs who are working in their countries and how different NGOs are contributing to the adult education sector of these countries. Before the break, we all agreed on sustainability of a project, and Mari was saying some work in policy level would help the work to be more sustainable. But since to get funding, all the NGOs have to go through a process where they have to put on all the detail to get funding for development, then where is the gap when it comes to people's expectation from the NGOs?
Sadly, one of the main expectations from people, in Honduras at least, is that they want prompt solutions to all the problems. I feel we live in this type of instant society where you can react, comment, do anything or get anything immediately. This is why you will see families that prefer to be given one bag with basic groceries or money stipends from the government or charity projects and not learning new lifelong learning skills that would perdure and promote less dependence. And Irini, does that happen in Greece as well?
Now that you mention it, Dania, I can say that something similar happens in Greece as well. So the thing is that we shouldn't forget the fact that when people don't have their basic needs covered, like food, clothing and housing, they do not move further to develop their skills and enhance their learning. I mean, what I mean is we need to target the livelihood needs first and then support the community's learning and development.
So we are all talking about development a lot, but what does this development actually mean? Would you like to elaborate, Mari?
I agree. NGO sector always talks about the development and especially development of so-called third world countries. The main problem here is that development is very often associated to the economic growth and competitiveness. We have all heard that European states talk a lot that they should be focusing on competitiveness and growth. And if you look at the literature, the progress is mainly understood as the unlimited accumulation of scientific and technological knowledge and increase of production and consumption capacities. For example, the Danish scholar and the great researcher Stavros Moutsios, who is doing a lot of research about NGO work, says that progress is understood as a Western modernity, which means that society's endless movement towards increasing wealth, domination over the nature, and domination over the human beings as well. This progress and development is not only related to the economics, it is translated to the educational policies as well. And it's interesting to look and reflect how is it reflected to the education and educational institutions. Mainly the progress in education for neoliberal globalization means that higher performance course in science and technology, more students entering higher education, more scientific researchers, more job-related adult learning, more extremely funded research, more international mobility, more academic publications, etc. And everything is more and more, as much as possible. So everything is oriented to have more.
So, but if the development and progress is not only related to economic, then what it is?
Yes, I agree. And nowadays, there are a lot of pressure from society that we should all be successful and have good job to be considered as developed and realized. But person could be happy without it as well. For example, I like the notion of economist and philosopher Amartya Sen, who advocates that we should think and discuss development as a people's capability to achieve things they have reason to value. Development can be a process of expanding the real freedoms that people enjoy. And I don't really remember who said it, but I really agree that technological progress of the society and of the time did not entirely rise of the moral level of mankind.
Interesting. What do you have to say about it, Dania?
Sabrina, I agree with Mari. This is very markedly on young adults. The levels of pressure are increasing due to all the exigencies of academic and work settings. And of course, our family and friends add some more pressure to it, telling us that it is never good enough, and their rooted idea of what it seems to be success. The levels of competence are ferocious, and we forget that the sense of achievement is also about sit down and recognize our effort and at the same time feeling the joy of it. People need to feel the confidence that whatever they do can be of a great value as long as the quality and effort are put on it. This reminds me of Alfonso Guillén Zelaya. He's one of the most important writers in Honduras. And a long time ago, he wrote an essay called What is Essential? So let me read one excerpt of what I believe fits with what we have just mentioned. What is essential is that each of us has dignity and conscience on our job, the pride of doing things well, the enthusiasm of feeling satisfied and value doing what is ours. He definitely encourages to be active participants in society regardless our occupation, no matter who we are or what we do. I believe that this is one of the main points where he makes us reflect on.
Thank you, Mari and Dania, for sharing your thoughts and some inspirational quotes to have clear conscience, especially when it comes to our job. So now let's move on to the challenges. What are the main challenges NGOs are facing in Greek community, Irini?
In the context of Greece, I think there are challenges on many fronts, but the key challenge is promoting and embedding the volunteering mentality in the Greek society. Moreover, there is the confusion that currently surrounds the funding that voluntary organizations receive by the state, the wider public sector, local authorities at sub-regional and local level, as well as funding provided by the private sector and by individuals.
Oh, that's interesting, Irini. Mari, you have been working in NGO sector for a really long time in Georgia. How would you describe the challenges of NGO work?
I will talk more about the general and the global perspective of the challenges. But before it's important for me to be clear about my worldview, by which my thoughts and ideas are influenced. I identify myself with the philosophy of critical and radical education, which means that for me the root causes of the whole NGO sector is capitalism system. Despite of that, I do acknowledge that NGOs is doing a lot of good work, but I am concerned with the ways adult education is used to address existing injustice. And my main issue with the NGO work is that educational programs are all about empowerment and reproducing the system rather than emancipation. And for them, the social inclusion option often means the inclusion of the oppressed into existing structures rather than the transformation of those structures. When we talk about the challenges, then another thing that comes in my mind is the question, what is the hidden agenda of the NGO work? And this hidden agenda leads me into the following aspects, like which are power relationships, what is the donor self-interest, if the aids are effective or not, post-colonial attitudes in educational programs and so on. I think that whole misunderstanding of the NGO, which is considered to be the civil society, is rooted in the problem. that there is not one big objective agreed and shared from all civil society organizations. And this leads them to the fragmentation because local solutions of global problems are not sufficient. And I really believe in that. We need involvement of all actors and systematic approach to deal with this massive and complicated system. Yes, they have sometimes genuine desire to create space for free education, but it will never be achieved unless there is the common agreement by all the NGOs and by the global civil society as a whole that there is a crucial need of redistribution of the world's wealth, which seems definitely difficult to achieve. But I think that instead of spending more of their time writing project proposals and reports, maybe the direct actions would be more relevant in this context.
So basically, post-colonialism is main challenge of employing NGOs in developing nations. So what do you think can be best practice for our country that will not reproduce the same system and be sustainable enough to develop a nation?
Well, Sabrina, I think I can add something on it. I cannot say this is the best practice, but I feel very enthusiastic and positive about building learning cities. I think that can be one initiative. The idea of learning cities is something I really support because it can develop different lifelong learning skills. UNESCO talks about it and suggests the characteristics of a learning city. Number one, promote inclusive learning from basic to higher education, revitalize learning in families and communities, facilitate learning for and in the workplace, extend the use of modern learning technologies, enhance quality and excellence in learning, and foster a culture of learning throughout life. If you want to get a better idea of learning cities being implemented and showing progress on it, I invite you to visit www.uil.unesco.org/lifelong-learning/learning-cities.
Thank you, Dania, Mari, and Irini for sharing and discussing your personal experience, thoughts, and views regarding NGOs' role in adult education of Honduras, Georgia, and Greece. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our show, so we have to stop this discussion for the day. Today, we discussed about NGO works and how various local and international non-government organizations is contributing to adult education sector. We also discussed about what development is, a little bit about post-colonialism and our views of how to overcome the challenges of NGO bureaucracy and what can be one of the possible mechanisms where community comes forward to develop themselves rather than expecting someone outside the community to develop our community for us. Hopefully you like today's discussion and will tune in to listen to our next show. Thanks very much to Charles, our technician. With this, me, Sabrina, Dania, Mari, and Irini saying goodbye for the day and grazie Hafna for listening to us.
Grazie Hafna.
Grazie Hafna.
Thank you very much.